Welcome, welcome. Good to see you, Jennifer. Good to see you, Pam. Hi. All right. I'm so happy to be with all of you. I hope that you had some nice space since we didn't meet last week. I was thinking about all of you. I was leading an in-person retreat for facilitators and just kind of bringing all of you into the your spirit and your energy into the container. All right, we're going to start off with just a little fun exercise today. I don't know if it'll be fun. It's an exercise. I find all exercises fun. Not me. I'm going to give you about 2.5 minutes, and it's a journaling exercise. And I want to invite you to start with the prompt, "Today I feel," and then keep on writing. Just keep on writing, see what wants to come through. It's an opportunity. Sometimes we get so busy, we forget to locate where we are, you know, like where we're at right in that moment, right? Or today. So start with "Today I feel" and see what wants to come through. Just keep on going. For those of us that are just coming in, I just gave a writing prompt of "Today I feel." Without thinking, just kind of writing quick, see what wants to come. "Today I feel." Keep on going. Let's see what wants to come. And take another 30 minutes. And when you're done writing, read over what you've written. The prompt was "Today I feel." So it's just a quick little exercise, whatever we want to call it, that I like to sometimes use with myself, sometimes with clients. Just in those moments, you know, life can be so busy, or we get so distracted, or sometimes we get so busy doing or worrying or whatever it is. And we kind of get disconnected from ourselves and all of that, right? We all know this. I'm sure we've all had experiences of this. And there's something that I find can be not only awareness creating, but really grounding about taking 2 or 3 minutes to connect in and just to see what's there for us, how we feel. In a minute, we're going to jump into Myth of Perfection, but I'd love to hear if there is a comment or two, not on what came through for you, but on this idea of just locating where we are, or what that little writing assignment was like for you, what you noticed. Anyone want to share? Going once, going twice. Okay. Oh, for Mika, it quickly became a list of imperfections, right? So that's so telling. Also, right, we can kind of see so much of what comes through in the writing and then look at it from a higher place to see where we're at. Sometimes just where our inner talk is at, and then that can help us adjust. Anything else wants to be shared on this? Okay. For Susan, it felt grounding to identify different strands of the swirl. Thank you. Thanks for those shares. All right, so today we are going to continue our kind of bigger, as we know, we're kind of in this bigger section of sacred depths on different tools in our toolbox to help clients with obstacles. And we're going to be looking at Myth of Perfection. We're going to be looking at foundational principles around it and then lots of different ways to work with it. In some ways, today's call is a continuation of rewiring and befriending fears, but through a specific lens of looking at perfection, or I should say, perfectionism. So let's start with what is perfectionism? And for our purposes today, here are some ways that I'll define it. This isn't fully comprehensive, but here are some different ways that I would define perfectionism. Needing to get it totally right? When we feel like we need to just get it exactly right. When we're not happy or feeling settled or feeling satisfied, unless it's absolutely perfect, right? When we just cannot feel settled unless it is absolutely perfect. Probably we're engaging in perfectionism. If we go into our survival skills, our fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, because something isn't perfect or isn't exactly as we expected it to be, probably engaging in perfectionism. If we find that we are judging ourselves or others harshly because something isn't perfect, probably engaging in perfectionism. Quick raise of hands, either in the Zoom or in your camera, if any of this sounds familiar to you at all. Yeah. So I probably don't have to share why perfectionism is an obstacle, but I will. It can become an obstacle in lots of different ways. So I'll start off with a short personal story about perfectionism. In my very first business that I had a business partner, Dawn, and both of us are Virgos, by the way. Virgo can tend to be perfectionists. And to make a long story short, we spent a year working on our website. But the year that we spent on our website, we got all of the initial writing done in the first 30, 40 days of that year. However, we kept on going back and changing the writing and making the writing better and trying to perfect the writing, over and over and over again, that we did not release this website to the world until a year later, and it held us up in so much of what we wanted to do. And I'm not actually sure that at the end the website was that much better than it was after the first or second month, right? So one way that perfectionism can be an obstacle, it can stop you from actually getting things done. Or it can make things take much longer to get done than they need to get done. Sometimes perfectionism can be an obstacle in the way that you don't even show up to do anything. You're so scared of not getting it perfect that you don't write the website or the email or show up to lead the class or show up for the conversation or whatever it is. You just opt out. In some cases, perfectionism may not stop you from getting things done, but it really eats away at your confidence. So you get it done, but you're questioning yourself and you're not feeling good in the getting it done. We can have perfectionism in any area. Work, our creative lives, romantic relationships, friendships, parenting, appearance, our homes, right? I could go on our yoga practice. Perfectionism can show up anywhere. Rosa, is your hand raised to ask a question or make a comment, or is it from before your hand raised? Oh, okay. Just wanted to make sure. All right, so let me ask you a couple of questions on this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how perfectionist are you? 10 being everything I've said so far is like a yes to the extreme happening all the time, right? One is like, you don't know what I'm talking about right now. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how perfectionist are you? Where are some of the places? Oh, I'm seeing some numbers. Good. Thank you for sharing. A sevens, eights, five. I like to see five, nine. Jennifer saying depends on what part of life we're talking about. We're going to get there in a moment. Yeah. And for me, it depends on the day, right? So next question, what are places that your perfectionism comes up? What are some of those parts of life where perfectionism comes up? Is saying everything except housework. I think I'm with you on that, Rosa. Except I like for my house to be clean. Yeah, exercise and fitness routines, work and education, parenting, being visible, writing. Yeah. Please share more examples. It's good to see them. Creating your website. Yeah. Here's another question to consider. What is helpful about your perfectionism? There's probably something helpful about it. And what is unhelpful about your perfectionism? What is helpful and what is unhelpful? Yeah, these are great shares in the chat. I'm going to ask a few more questions and then I'll ask for some voice-to-voice shares on all of this. Next one is another writing prompt. Yeah, all these, I'm going to pause on that for a moment. Thank you for these shares in the chat. Please, perfectionism sometimes helps us care deeply about things. Excellent brings excellence and quality. Made you into a really good writer, critical thinking. I'm reading just the helpful ones right now, pushes me to do more, feeling into what feels right, intuition, striving to do and be better. The reason why I'm highlighting this for a moment is to illustrate why it can be so hard to release perfectionism and the myth of perfection. We need to find other ways of looking at this so that we can hold on to the helpful while releasing the perfectionism that hurts us, right? That isn't helpful for us. But I think it's an important point, right? That we don't want to get rid of things that we think are helping us. Okay, here's a writing prompt. I'll give you about 45 seconds to a minute on this one. Just write, don't think it so much as just write, see what wants to come through. Being perfect will save me from. Being perfect will save me from. Being perfect will save me from. Take another 10 seconds on this one. And bring that writing to a close. Take a moment, read it over. And then one more writing prompt, and we'll open up for some voice-to-voice shares. My parents, and you can insert people other than your parents for this one if you want to say my teachers, my caregivers, so whatever feels right for you. My parents expected me to be perfect by my parents, or insert whoever you want in there, expected me to be perfect by my religion, right? Whatever feels right for you on this. Take one more moment with the app. Okay, bring that writing to a close. I'm gonna add in one more question for extra credit before we have shares. Just something to think about. Who in your life do you expect perfection or near perfection from, maybe without even realizing it? Who are you holding to too high standards? Because if we are holding perfectionism, we may also be projecting that onto others, maybe even our clients. All right, I'd love to hear some voice-to-voice shares. What are you seeing so far? What's feeling important so far for you? What are you noticing? Who wants to share? Susan, thanks for getting us started.
I found it interesting when we were writing, Being Perfect Will Save Me From, how juvenile some of my answers were, like being yelled at or being in trouble, where some of my being embarrassed. But it was weird when I wrote being yelled at. It just sort of wrote without me thinking about it, or being in trouble. It's very, I didn't like being in trouble, or being definitely not being yelled at. And as an adult, when I first got my job here, a doctor called me and yelled at me, and I just lost it completely and was bawling my eyes out and like had to go home. And my boss like called my husband and was like, she okay? So as an adult, I'm very affected by being yelled at by anyone. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sorry that happened. And thank you for sharing. I think what you're sharing is so important and it makes such an important point is so often when we go into that perfectionism, it is because of fears of the then and there versus in all of our empowerment of the here and now.
Yeah.
And it's almost like we can see it in this extreme way through the writing. I'm scared I'm going to be yelled at. That may not happen as we go through our life and hold ourselves back because of perfectionism, but it's operating in there somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, it comes out like I wouldn't want anyone to say anything mean or about in social media and a comment or something, that kind of thing I'm very afraid of, or Yeah.
Good. Thank you so much for sharing. Danielle.
Yeah, I always find this an interesting conversation because for me personally, this makes me think of clients who might have similar experiences. I would hear the word perfectionism, I don't know, whenever people started talking about it as a thing, maybe for me from teen years on. And I did not identify this in myself. I thought of it, and it maybe was the way people were even speaking about it, in terms of the very visible, just, you know, and sometimes just the mainstream conversation about this is about like, oh, your house is perfect. Your clothes have to be perfect. You blah, blah, blah. That's not how it shows up for me. I mean, don't pay attention behind me. But I have for over a decade, probably two, realized, oh, this is very much in me now, or has always been. And it's subtle because it actually feels more like the sneakiness of it is not like I need to be perfect. That's too obvious for me. I would just like shut that down, right? It's more like, it's just a general feeling of it's never enough. You could always do more. The words just do your best as a child were incredibly oppressive for me. We might have spoken about this because I was like, my best. Okay, yes, I got an A, but that was not my best. I could have stayed up all night. There's no end. And now I've traced that to like family of origin stuff that there really was never enough of a particular parent feeling validated and getting what they needed from their children. And you internalize that and those pathways get fired very deep. So it's just an interesting evolution of awareness. And now I'm so aware and I'm realizing those things that, you know, being perfect will save me from. A lot of it has to do with just needing to just grow in that self-trust of like, one of the things I wrote was like not knowing what to do next. Because if you do fail or if something just falls completely flat, do I trust that I can like whew, move through that and pick up the pieces? And yeah. I want to shout out that Bethany Webster apparently trained with you and I followed her for years and she had an amazing call last week with people about the mother wound and reparenting, and I hear so much of your work and a lot of what she shares, and it just seems like, yeah, a lot of this is that younger part calling the shots because that's what was safe.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad that you're also sharing this piece for ourselves and for our clients. We may not recognize it at first as perfectionism, right? That word may seem like something like, no, that's not me. But when we start to take a deeper look at least the way we're defining it here, yes, all of these different pieces apply. Good. Maria's sharing in the chat, perfectionism will save me from wasting my time, repeating the same mistakes, from being mediocre. Oh, the ultimate, right? Curse can't be mediocre. We have time for one more share, voice to voice. Anyone else want to share what's coming up, what you're seeing, what's feeling important? You guys are quiet today. Jennifer.
Yes. I think what, and I knew this deep inside of me, but the fact that it just came up immediately when you gave the prompt, being perfect will save me from, the first thing that came to mind was being harmed, betrayed, and deceived by others. Because that's something that I have the biggest challenge with is being able to rely on other people, especially when it comes to work where I'm responsible for it as well, or being in the public eye, or you know, something like that.
Yeah, when you just shared that, I could feel that viscerally, that's really like there is that fear there around it. And it's so tough because to be perfect is so hard. Actually, we're gonna get there in a few minutes, right? And then to be feeling that every day at work is a lot. Thank you for sharing. Hopefully as we move, I know I'm holding everybody in some of their discomfort. Hopefully as we move through today, we'll find some ways to go deeper with all of this. Okay, a little side note before we keep on going, but just another way to a type of perfectionism that I want to note. A subset of perfectionism is expecting that growth, transformation, or any kind of accomplishment is going to look neat and linear instead of messy and cyclical. I'm going to say that again. A kind of perfectionism is the expectation that growth, transformation, or accomplishment of any kind is going to be easy, neat, linear, instead of messy, cyclical. Yeah, Jed is saying, ooh, that one, right? Yeah, just to call myself included, right? Like to call us out a little bit more. Change takes time. Soul work takes time. Accomplishment takes time. It doesn't always, right? It's messy. It's not linear. It works in cycles. So that is a way that perfection might be showing up for you or your clients as well. Okay. So I call this session the myth of perfection because perfection, I ask you to consider this. Perfection is actually a myth, and it's a patriarchal myth at that. For one thing, there's no such thing as a human being perfect. Perfection is truly only for the gods, maybe, right? And I'm going to suggest, and this might be an interesting way to think about it, that when we get stuck in our perfectionism, our own perfectionism, we're also stuck in a little bit of a God complex. We are confusing ourselves for the gods. Right? But there's no way for any human project, any human creation to be perfection. And then here's the other thing, why it's a myth. Who exactly set these standards of perfection that we go by? And how do these standards of perfection uphold societal power structures? When we fall into perfectionism, even if it is a personal perfectionism thing, is it also upholding unequal power structures because of the people that have set the standards for perfection in our society? Are you all with me on this? And it's an important piece for us to look at when we are striving to be something. Who told us that we need to be that thing? When we're stuck in this myth of perfection, what I have found is that we're actually almost all of the time when we're stuck in it, engaged in black or white thinking. So it becomes this ping pong game, this very painful ping pong game with the perfection and the black and white thinking. And it looks a little bit like this. I need to be perfect. I need to be perfect. I need to be perfect, right? Like all the way on the extreme. And then what happens? We're not perfect. And so we get ping-ponged into I'm a failure. All the way the other extreme of the spectrum, the black and white, right? I'm a failure. I'm a failure. I'm a failure. Okay, I'm gonna be perfect. I'm gonna be perfect. I'm gonna be perfect, right? Like we're looking for that again, that extreme perfection, and then we're not. And then slammed back into, well, so then I'm a failure. And we tend to live in the places where we're perfectionists. We tend to live only on the extremes of that spectrum of failure or perfection. And we never live in the middle ground in those areas. But the middle ground is where real life is. It's where reality is. It's not mediocre to be in the middle. It's actually where the gold is. Pause on that. I'll ask a couple questions on this in a moment, but what's sparking for you on all of this, on the myth and the ping pong game? What's feeling important? Wants to share? You all are so quiet today. Kristen.
Hi.
Hi.
So what is, I can relate to this so much. I grew up Mormon and with a very high exacting mother with very black and white thinking. I think she's probably on the spectrum. And neurodivergence also lends you to more black and white thinking and scrupulosity. And as far as like with religion, with perfectionistic ideals. Yeah, so I can relate to this a lot. And I have been a lot in that stage where I've judged myself as a failure because I didn't think that I was living up to the degree of perfection that I wanted to. But then, like, I feel like perfection is not even definable completely. Like, it's this nebulous idea with a bunch of very, very high standards, that some of which we might know of and some of which we don't know. And like, we're measuring ourselves up to this thing that we can just constantly use as a battering ram for ourselves.
Yes. Yes. So well said. Yes. And it's so important for us to bring more and more awareness to that and how we're using it as the battering ram and to support our clients to do that. Because it's so easy for it to slip under the radar in this culture and just to be like, these are our aspirations. We should be going for this and not accepting anything else.
Yeah, I see it a lot also like in the beauty arena, like anti-aging and beauty. Mm-hmm. And there was that really powerful book, The Beauty Myth, back in the 80s that came out. And that really talks to this. And I mean, I also was trained as an opera singer, and that is another high demand culture with very, very high ideals of perfection. And if you're not meeting at least certain standards of excellence, you don't even work.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can really relate to this. So thank you for letting me share.
Yeah, thank you. Catherine.
Hey, the first thing, actually the last year made me think one of the things is that like the expectations are really contradicting that it is. Like, I think of that like woman pressure, be like tall, but not too tall, and be like thin, but don't be that, you know, that there's like the A and not A at the same time, which I think makes perfectionism or gaining perfection really hard because there isn't an actual target. But the thing that I was thinking of originally when you asked the question was when we talked about sort of like what are people's energy or motivation levels, I'm blanking on exactly what it was, but it's like, is it the person who like ruminates for a while and then takes action, or is it the slow and steady marathoner?
Yeah.
And that like I perfectionism is like the number one trait I've been working on for the past few years. But what I realize it is that like the enthusiasm of the new and the hope, and so there's this real energy up, and then it's too hard to meet it, and so it plummets, and so there's nothing that happens, and a lot of procrastination, and then the will comes back up, and so it's this real yo-yo of like motivation and energy and accomplishments and backtracking.
Yes, yeah, and that reminds me of that ping-ponging too. It's like either a ton of motivation or none. And is that being dictated by how you're feeling about all of it? Yeah. Good. Thank you. Amy.
Yeah, what came up for me as you were describing the ping-ponging and how we like to hold ourselves in these extremes, like it's got to be this and it's got to be that, but actually this finding the middle ground. And I know that to be true for myself of like, yes, being in the middle, then I could also really feel in my body that discomfort of like, what that actually is to be in the middle and pull oneself away from those extremes and how much it's like, but I want to be over there and then I'm going to be over here. And one of the sort of the threads that perhaps was around that is the safety or the messaging about not being encouraged to actually be in that middle place, about a pressure of a push or a pull to be that way or that way, you know, and this kind of like, wow, that's not feeling supportive. So pushing through to come back to that, I suppose, like for myself, like being that place of what do I know is true for me, rather than coming, you know, pushing back into those, it's got to be that or that. So that
Yes.
was what was coming up there.
Yeah, I think it's so important what you're saying is to move out of the cycle. We have to be willing to know what is important for us, like what is our truth separate from those patriarchal, capitalist, whatever we want to call them, truths, and be with that. Yeah, thank you. Good. Susan H in the chat is saying perfectionism is feeling like a smoke screen, a form of resistance intended to deliberately keep us out of the middle ground where real, unfamiliar, scary change can happen. Yes, so beautifully said. Yeah, and Brie is saying advertising and social media, they absolutely play a role. So true. Yes, and it is exhausting. Okay, so some of you probably are already thinking about this. I'll just give you a moment to make note. Where are some places in your life or work right now that you're engaging in binary thinking? I'm either totally beautiful and sexy, or I'm completely gross and disgusting. I am an incredible success. Or I'm a total failure, right? Just those two things, and there's nothing else. I have so much spaciousness, or if you don't have all of that perfect amount of spaciousness, then it means I have no time at all. I'm either ideally perfectly healthy, or I'm super, super sick. I'm an amazing practitioner, and then the other only other choice is I'm the worst practitioner that ever was, right? So, where are some of the places that you're engaging in binary thinking? Just another form of perfectionism. Okay. Hopefully, you've uncovered at least one other place. The reason why I'm spending, as I always do, so much time kind of on the foundational pieces. In a moment, we're going to move on to ways of working with this myth of perfection, is for our own understanding and awareness so we can work with it, but also so that we can really understand more deeply as we're listening to our clients, right? And be able to see, oh, this is happening for them. Because as Danielle said earlier, they're probably not going to mention the word perfect as they're talking, or perfectionism, or whatever it is. Okay, so let's talk about ways to work with the myth of perfection. There are a number of different ways that we're going to look at. A lot of them are already things that we have learned, but to just apply to this, and then a bunch of new ways as well. So, check, this goes back to listening filters. Check your own perfectionism filters when you're working with clients. if you are working with a client and you're thinking that they're going to do the plan perfectly in a linear way without it being messy, or they're going to do it exactly so, right? Like that's how it should look. Remember, energy follows energy. It's going to encourage more perfectionism on your client, right? So really looking at where are you expecting perfection from your client, or from how their projects are going to look as they execute them, or for how they show up. Or where are you maybe falling into your client's perfectionist thinking on some things as well, right? So we always want to check our beliefs, our filters, our energetics on it. Sometimes after the energetics, one of the first things that we may want to do is to co-create awareness with our clients that they have fallen into perfectionist thinking, right? And so you want to use all of your creating awareness tools. You might reflect to your client, my sense is that your perfectionist is showing up a little bit right now. You might use here's another example of reflecting. I notice that sometimes when you feel under pressure, you go into this place where everything needs to be perfect. You might use a consulting tool. That's an unrealistic expectation. You might co-create awareness by asking questions. I'll share with you some of my favorite questions that I ask when I sense there's perfectionism that I want a client to see. This is what they're doing. What would perfectionism look like in this scenario, right? And they name it, and then quickly they see, oh, that's what I've been doing. How hard are you being on yourself here? What would you expect of X here? I'll pick someone that they don't project perfectionism on that I know in their lives, right? What would you expect of your son in this situation? What would be acceptable here if it didn't have to be perfect? What's the binary thinking that you're applying to this situation? Sometimes I might ask whose system or what culture's standards does this reflect? Another thing that I like to sometimes do is I'll ask a client to quick make three columns. And the first column is perfect and unrealistic. I tell them to label it that. The second column is ideal. You can also do this with two columns if you don't see the difference between ideal and then perfect and unrealistic. And then the last column is truly good enough. And I'll ask them to fill in for whatever situation we're looking at, what it would look like under perfect and unrealistic, what it would look like under ideal, what it would look like under truly good enough. So as an example, let's say I'm working with a client, they're talking about their own client sessions. Perfect and unrealistic might be they knock every single session out of the park, bring their client to their knees every single time, every single session. Their clients are moving forward without any resistance. They never get stuck, right? And then there's consistent growth without any plateaus or setbacks, right? Even just once somebody identifies that, it's like, oh, that's the standard I've been judging myself by, right? And then I'll just skip to truly good enough for now for sake of time. Maybe truly good enough is my clients feel seen and loved by me. They are moving forward on their goals. And there are sometimes plateaus, there are stuck places, but they're learning how to access their own inner wisdom and self-compassion as they move forward, right? So this kind of cognitive creating awareness. Another way to kind of create awareness, this is a little bit different, but how are you setting expectations with a client at the beginning of a project? And as you're visioning with them and as you're doing initial strategizing with them, I feel like I often say, okay, it's not going to be perfect. We're planning it to look like this, but you know, this and the, you know, so many things are likely to happen. You know, things will get messy, but this is kind of like the ideal that we're going for. And then we know a lot's going to happen within there. Okay, let me pause on here. Thoughts or questions on either the energetics, the checking filters piece, or creating awareness piece. No? Okay. And keep on going. This is a small point, but it's an important point before we get to some of the other strategies. As leaders, as coaches, as practitioners, one important way throughout our work with clients of really working to dismantle the myth of perfection is to be letting our clients know that we are imperfect and that awesome things are still happening anyway, right? Whenever a leader or a practitioner puts themselves on a pedestal or doesn't share their imperfections or makes it seem like it's always easy or they don't struggle with things, they are creating more of a culture of perfection. We see this in politics all the time, right? And then the negative impact that it has. I know as leaders, as practitioners, it can sometimes feel scary to show our imperfections because then we're scared, you know, we're not going to be seen as viable or a good enough practitioner, you know, all the things. But I promise you, because I share my imperfections all the time, it's not the case at all. It not only makes you more relatable, and it not only helps a client not hold themselves to such high standards and be so hard on themselves, but it also helps you be seen as a really good practitioner. Anything that wants to be said on that?
Sorry, I just unmuted myself.
Oh, Victor, go ahead.
Sorry, Jen, I couldn't find my raised hand thing. I was just thinking about how counter that is to like what we're all spoon fed, and that like the curated view that we tend to all see, and then like it or not, have to like consider it one way or another. Not necessarily comparing ourselves, but it's in our field of consideration. So I feel like it's a courageous act of like humanity almost to put
yourself out there, showing your imperfections and humanizing it and normalizing this is a way to hold space altogether.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for saying that. I couldn't agree more. And it is, like you're saying, courageous. And also I just believe so deeply it has that impact on humanity and the ripple effects of that. Jen.
Yeah, I'm curious what you have to say about balancing being vulnerable while still staying in leadership. I know it's important to, like, if you're gonna, let's say, share a story, you want to be healed enough that you're, you know, not needing tending to. I get that part. But I've been practicing this, being a little bit more vulnerable with my clients and sharing a little bit more, and not just like, I don't necessarily mean like, oh yeah, my experience when talking about, let's say, perfectionism, blah, blah, blah. But they'll ask me, you know, about like, how are you doing? They really want to know like how I'm doing, and I'm doing great. But I can tell like they want to know more. And the truth is I'm going through a transition with my partner, and, you know, so just curious what you have to say about leadership and vulnerability.
Yeah, it's such a great question. So like first, there's two opposing, two opposing answers to it, but hopefully it'll still be helpful. The first is one that you already kind of spoke to, which you hear a lot, which I think is a very good answer. And I think it's one aspect of it, which is, you share things that you're over in a way. Or I heard someone on a podcast the other day put it, share your scars, but not your scabs. Like anything that is oozy, you know, if it's still is a scab, it's like still oozing and all of that. No, but if it's a scab, if it's a scar, then yes. My opposing, it's not even, I have, and I, yes to all of that. And then my second answer, and again, none of this is truth because I'm imperfect. Sure. So see, and I don't, it's like opposing, but not, because I think I hold both depending on the situation, is I will sometimes share, you know, the scab or how things are messy right now. Mm-hmm. I'll do it if there are two conditions involved. Number one, if I can stay regulated as I share it. Number two, if the sharing of it, if, how do I want to put this? Because I don't want it to be reductive. If I can still impart wisdom through the sharing of it in brilliant. One way or another.
Brilliant. That- yeah, that is helpful. There's been a particular really incredible healing experience from, gosh, it's been like 20-year cycle. And it's also can be triggering for other people. So I'm kind of like, I've noticed if I say this to anyone and share this vulnerable thing, that is like a really incredible story and monumental piece to me in my life, that they immediately go, oh no, you know, and I'm like, no, like, I don't need to be right. Tended to. Right. So yeah. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. I think to say up front, I'm going to share with you because you asked and because I want to be vulnerable. And I think there you will receive from my sharing, but I want you to know up front, I'm good. I don't need to be taken care of. I'm taking good care of myself. Right. And then you don't share that with everyone. You make decisions right. On how and where.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Bruce.
Yeah. A lot swirling around this topic for me. So I have no idea if what I'm going to say is going to make any sense at all with this. And it's this idea, like, you know, I get the whole perfection thing. There seems like there's also an edge there of perfectionism that is a point of, and there's a couple of different thoughts that are coming through to me, but is this point of resistance or creation? And I may be way off on what I'm feeling or thinking through here. Like there's this edge of tolerance when we're aware of our perfectionism that can also create something. So there's that farther edge. I don't know if this is making any sense at all. And then there's this other piece that came up to me about humility, and not being more, and this idea of not being more than we are and not being less than we are. And I don't know how all this ties into perfectionism, but I was like playing with these edges, and also this myth of and the book by Gabor Mate comes to mind, the myth of normal. Like, what is, you know, what is the normal state of that? And is there a normal state? And that, you know, we go to these edges, and these edges create, if when we're aware of them, the space to create things or to notice things differently. I don't know if any of that makes any sense.
I mean, it's making sense to me. I might not be understanding it the way that you're meaning it.
I don't know if I understand.
I'll tell you what comes up. I'll tell you one of the things that comes up for me as you're sharing, and this might be exactly what you're talking about or completely off. But what it made me think about is, after all of these years of looking at my perfectionism and understanding it and working with it in my best moments, because I still get caught away with it, but in my best moments, it's not that my perfectionist isn't there, but in my best moments, I'm using my perfectionist aspirationally without, so that I can achieve more, so that I can be better, so that I can be a better human, but I'm not beating myself up for not getting there.
Yeah, there was something there that it's acknowledging that part of perfection, that perfectionist, but being aware of the purpose of it.
That's right.
And pushing it, and not pushing it, but noticing the edge of it, right?
Absolutely.
That can also create something, right? That can also bring something to life. And then the other end of it is, like, there's three edges to this. There's that, and then there's the other edge of being less than, and that also creates something. And then there's this part in the middle that's like this normal, this myth of normal, like, I'm not, you know, that I'm all of these things. So it was just swirling inside of me, and I'm like, I need to make sense of this somehow.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you shared and articulated. Thank you. I want to read that book. Okay, let's keep on going. I'm going to move pretty quickly for the rest of this call. I want to give you some other things to think about as you're working with perfectionism. So you can, if you notice this in a client and then you co-create awareness, if it's appropriate, you can do a befriend your fear, right? With the fear of not being perfect. Or the fear of what will happen, ask the client, what, you know, similar to what I asked you, being perfect will keep me safe from, right? What do you think it's going to keep you? And then do a befriend your fear with that. So that's one way that you can work with it. Another way is that you can work with your client's inner perfectionist, similar to the ways we might work a BYF or a rewiring. You can bring that perfectionist down in front of them or have them feel the perfectionist inside of them, befriend the perfectionist itself, dialogue with it, ask it questions, get to its higher wisdom, right? Because it is great that Bruce just shared, because there are ways that the perfectionist can be helpful, but are we in right relationship with our inner perfectionist? Remember, we never want to get rid of any part of us. So I don't want anyone to walk away from this call thinking, oh my gosh, my perfectionist is bad, right? Like my perfectionism is bad. No, 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 no. It is always about better relationship. We need all of our parts, right? That's why I asked, how is it helpful also? So we can do a somatic process with that perfectionist archetypally, just like we've learned either through Befriend Your Fear or through rewiring. Does that make sense? Okay, good. You can also have your client, or if you want to have a practice for yourself, simply journal from the voice of your perfectionist and your perfectionist's higher wisdom. Rewire some of that. You can apply any of the rewiring techniques that we looked at. We looked mainly at that somatic technique last time, but remember we also looked at tracking, right? So you can ask a client to track all of their perfectionist thoughts for a week. When are they coming up? What are the conditions? What are they actually thinking? What is a better way of thinking, right? So that they start to catch it as they move through. You'll have in your member center a demo of working. I think you will. I hope I'm telling you the right thing, but I'm pretty sure you're going to have in your member center a demo of working with the perfectionist too. Any thoughts or questions on that before I move forward and talk about some other ways to work with it? No. Okay. This is a little like bonus thing that I just want to talk about for a moment. Okay. So I'm going to briefly, ever so briefly explain a part of shadow. So oftentimes when we put a part of ourselves in shadow, and what that means is when we repress a part of ourselves, when a part of ourselves isn't expressed, when we think a part of ourselves is shameful, what happens is that black and white spectrum that I was talking about becomes even more exaggerated, where we bop back and forth from, we're trying so hard to stay away from the thing that we don't want to be. When it comes to perfectionism, sometimes we can bop back and forth between the perfectionist on the one side, and then something on the complete other opposite side. For some of us, it might be the sloth. For some of us, it might be the lazy one. For some of us, it might be the one who makes mistakes all the time. In other words, they're two sides of the same coin. The perfectionist might show up as the sloth, the lazy one, the sloppy one, the mistake maker. Does that, I know I there's so much more to talk about with shadow. We can even forget that I said the word shadow, but does that make sense what I'm saying? So if we can't be the perfectionist, somehow we end up showing up as the other one, almost in this like on steroids way. And again, it's a way of missing the golden middle. So we can work archetypally with the sloth if that's showing up for our client, or the lazy one, or the mistake maker, or the sloppy one, right? I just want you all to know that those are usually related to perfectionism. Not always, but oftentimes they are. And just like when we looked at resistance archetypes again, because we're looking at archetypes, I want to remind you, love, right? Love and compassion for the archetype, no matter how much havoc it is causing. So we can use any one of the tools we've already learned with the unsavory expression of the perfectionism. Okay, I saw a little bit in the chat about growth mindset, and I just want to share that is another way to work to kind of to create more of balance when the perfectionism is there, is to bring a growth mindset into things, right? The road to success is always under construction. I love that phrase. My daughter's school has a different phrase for the year that they work on all year. That was one year. The road to success is always under construction, right? Talk about the myth of arrival. That's another myth, right? That like, once we finally accomplish this and it's this, and this, like, then I've finally arrived. I mean, I felt that way in so many levels of my business until finally a number of years ago, I came to realize like I have already arrived and I'm also never going to arrive. So don't let that eat me up inside, right? What have you learned, right? Looking at the learnings of things. All of that helping with that growth mindset. Okay, so this last piece is one of my favorite little tools. Even though, nevertheless. So the tool is called Even Though, Nevertheless. And I love it because I just see it as such a great and effective way to move out of binary thinking and to support the growth mindset and to disrupt that myth of arrival and the myth of perfectionism. So even though, nevertheless, and it also honors what is. So even though, nevertheless, is a series of statements that you ask your client to make about their situation. They fill in the blank after even though, and they fill in the blank after nevertheless. The even though is the thing that sucks, the thing that's not perfect. And the nevertheless is what's going to bring them to the middle of the spectrum. So I'll give you an example. I think some of you know I have a teenage daughter named Penina. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot, and it makes me feel like a shitty parent, nevertheless, she opens and shares, she shares openly with me and she calls on me whenever she's in need. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot and it makes me fear I'm a shitty parent, nevertheless, she's kind of slowly learning that we have some rules in the house in order to keep her safe, and she gets it. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot and it makes me fear I'm a shitty parent, nevertheless, she's a strong, confident kiddo and young woman who isn't afraid to speak her mind. So some good things must be happening in the house here. Do you see what that does? I'm not bypassing the fear of not being perfect. I'm acknowledging it with the even though, but then I'm finding lots of ways to bring it out of the extreme and to see that I am in that middle place where the world is with it. So when I ask clients to do this, and when I do this for myself, this is one of my own practices. When I notice that I'm in that black and white thinking, I invite to do at least 10 at a time, where what's after the even though is always the same, but then what's after the nevertheless, each one is different. And I ask them to do that a couple of times over a week or two, even if in different sittings, they end up having the same neverthelesses afterwards, it's fine. But to bring themselves out of the only things aren't working, only things aren't perfect, but to see the fullness, to honor all that is in the situation and actually locate where the real place where they are in it. Let me pause on that. Thoughts, questions, what's coming together? Nisha's saying, I love that even though, nevertheless, I wonder if this makes people settle or not make a change. I guess it can depend on their goals and the context. It's such a great question, Nisha. I have not seen that to be true. I would say it settles their nervous system, but not like, oh, there's nothing different I need to do, because I'm still holding what their ultimate vision is, right? So in the examples that I gave for me, like my vision is still aspirationally to be the absolute best parent that I can be. So I'm still working on tweaking and ways that Panina and I butt heads, and what I can do differently so that it doesn't cause shame in a moment or a blow up or whatever it is. And I can also hold that there is so much good that's happening at the same time, and I'm not a failure in it. And what I have found, and you're right, like it depends on context, but it actually gives more energy and motivation to keep on changing, because we're moving. There's a Hebrew saying from, we've spoken about this before, from strength to strength, right? So when we're in our failure, yes, sometimes that's motivating, but when we can see our power and what is also what's going well, that helps, I think, even more. Rosa.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I think there's a place in me that sometimes wonders that same thing. And for me, you know, that if I'm too compassionate with myself, am I going to just stop growing, right? And I realize that for me, it's really something about like the underlying belief system that I grew up with, right? When we were doing the writing, what I wrote was something about, you know, my perfectionism keeps me safe from being punished. So there's a lot of layers of it, but I think underneath it, it was also like, you know, what did my parents believe would happen if they weren't always trying to be perfect? And I think that their belief is that, you know, people would just stop trying at all, right? And I know that for me, like my belief is that human beings naturally want to grow and get better, you know, in the absence of something holding them back. But I just feel like with many other things, it's like part of changing my belief structure. It's like, I believe it up here, but how do I really fully embody that belief that of course I'm going to want to grow, even if I'm not like goading myself with, you know, some kind of emotional lash.
Yes. Well, you do know how. Let's just remind you, find it in your body. Find where you do, even if it's the tiniest little pinky toe place, right? Find where you believe that in your body and lean into it, stoke the flame of that, connect with that, and have a practice of that, and you'll feel it more and more.
Right.
Thank you for that. Danielle.
Just to continue what Rosa was just sharing, that is so powerful, and it feels like the work that we're doing in this type of coaching and the energetics here is so much about people coming into a deeper relationship of trust with themselves. It's not some coincidence that most of us are unlearning so much, and like you've spoken about in the sister wound course you did, the short call you did about patriarchy and women and scarcity mindset, and like you just peel a little bit and that original sin belief, I'm not here to like critique a particular, but I could see even for people who were not raised in a very fundamentalist religion like myself and some others here, it has seeped into culture. And it's so interesting. It's like, okay, like you said at the beginning, what is that tied to? If you get people to think that they can't trust themselves and they're actually at their core untrustworthy, then they'll probably shut up and listen a bit more when you dictate how things are going to be, and take that to every level. And also with schools, a lot of people have like school wounds of like embodied having to shut up all day and just take from one person. I think we could all do better in like reimagining what education looks like. So anyway, it's just really tied to other stuff you've spoken about with like scarcity and trusting ourselves. And I love that we're all like in this business of like helping people reconnect. That's like a movement awakening happening.
It is. It really is. The longer I do this work with myself and with others, the more I see it more and more that all of our personal work is related to our culture work. Period. End of story. And it's I get chills saying it, because that's one of the reasons why I believe so strongly in everything that we're all doing. It's so important. It's so important. Thank you. Okay, so if with all the strategies that we looked at today, first, just let me say this. Obviously, you can mix and match the different tools that I shared. If you have a client, you can, as an example, first create awareness about the unrealistic perfectionist standards that they're operating under. Then you might do a befriend your fear process around not being perfect and the fear of not being perfect, and then come out of that with some action steps or inner and outer work for them to do. Or first you might create awareness around binary thinking on a topic, and then you might look at what shadow they turn into when they go into the binary thinking, the sloth, the mistake maker, whatever, do a process around that, and then a round of even though nevertheless, right? So you can mix and match all of it. Use the tools as whatever feels most appropriate. If you are liking the even though nevertheless, I want to invite you into a 7-day even though nevertheless challenge. Don't be perfectionist about it if you miss a day. But you know, it's always good to do things that we're going to ask our clients to do, right? And so maybe you have a topic, whether it's around your work or a personal relationship, like the one that I shared, or your home or your appearance or whatever it is that you would like to get out of some of that binary thinking, some of that myth of perfection with. Can you every day for the next 7 days do 10 to 20 of these? And as you do them, don't just do it them to get it done. I'd rather you do less than 10, like 5 or 6, but be embodied as you do them. Breathe as you do each one, like take in each nevertheless, feel it deeply inside of yourself, right? And then see after the week where you are with it. it's not going to be completely gone. I can tell you that now. But are you more in the middle, right? Are you more gentle with yourself around it? Are there less of the obstacles? Maybe you're willing to take more action, whatever it is. So if that interests you, I invite you to the even though, nevertheless. Or maybe you want to do a 7-day challenge on dialoguing with your inner perfect, the highest wisdom of your inner perfectionist every day. And really making a commitment to become better friends and in better relationship with your perfectionist or one of your perfectionist shadows. Maybe that's someone that you want to take on. Whatever it is, again, no perfectionism with any of it. If you do it once and then you don't do it the next 2 days, don't beat yourself up and then say it's done. I've failed, so I can't continue with this, right? Just get back on and do it, right? So my invitation to you on a personal level is to take one of these pieces and move some transformation, some breakthroughs into getting closer to some transformations on this. We have a couple minutes left. I'd love to invite everybody to write down what are you taking away? Hopefully a lot, but what's the most important thing that you're taking away from our time together today? Or a couple of the most important things. And I'd love to hear any last shares or questions before we wrap. What are you taking? What questions do you have? Jen?
Yeah, something that was really interesting to me was the binary thinking, the perfectionist and the victim archetype.
Yeah, how so?
That like all or nothing thinking.
Yeah, I have no power here. I'm completely helpless.
Yeah, the two sides of the coin with the perfectionist and the lazy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I can't be perfect, then I'm gonna be victimized.
Yeah, almost like that. Yeah, the all or nothing. The all or nothing kind of rings for me almost like I'm protecting, like the perfectionist protects us and me from being the victim. Because something that I wrote earlier was, you know, from the being perfect will save me from, I wrote public humiliation, being burned at the stake, being alone or killed, being shamed, being abandoned.
That was kind of one of the deeper pieces I didn't get into the shadow, is that when we have a part of ourselves, like the victim or the sloth or the lazy one, and we're like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that. Then we just go to the whole other extreme. So I need to be perfect. So I need to be perfect. So I need to be perfect. Right. And I think that's what you're talking about, is like, it's, we so don't want to be these parts of ourselves, which all have healthy expressions. And so then we try to be this other thing that's the exact opposite of it, to protect ourselves from being it, that other thing.
Interesting to hear you say healthy expressions, because the biggest one that came through was my biggest core belief was being unlovable. Like, oh, if I'm not perfect, I'm unlovable. But is that I see what you mean, like the healthy expression might be to like grieve that and then move through it, or I don't know, I don't want to project that on you, but I'm curious what you mean by the healthy expression.
So I don't know that we have inside of ourselves the I'm unlovable, but we might have inside of ourselves one who feels they can't be loved. And I'm not that I anyway, what I meant by the highest expression is like a big part of my work the last few years is reclaiming the lazy part of me. Because I've been so scared of being seen as lazy, that has fueled so much of my overworking. I've done everything to not be lazy, but really my lazy one has so much for me that I need for my well-being and for my pleasure. When I'm not at one extreme or the other, when I'm in that middle place, that aligned place. Even I would say the victim mm-hmm. has a higher, like my victim is what allows for a lot of my drama when I'm facilitating to come mm-hmm. through, right?
Okay, I see. So the healthy expression is really like the higher expression of like the protector or the like silver lining.
The aligned, yeah, the aligned one. That is helpful for us. Yeah. Thanks, Bruce.
And the other thing I've been playing with this whole time is, you know, thinking about all the perfectionism and so forth, like how it applied to how I, you know, manifest things in the world. And my process is, you know, going from one thing to another and never completing things, right? But it's served in a different way too. Like I was talking about earlier, you know, it also, it's like, so why don't I always finish things or stick with them? Because it's uncomfortable to get to that place where it's done. Yeah. Possibly is it done right, right?
That's right. Like so this is done and it's also not perfect.
Right. And then moving on to something else. The other aspect of that, as I was talking about earlier too, that it also generates a lot of new ideas too at the same time. So I it's like that, you know, inch deep, mile wide versus mile deep, you know, inch wide thinking or aspect of that. And I've worked with that over the years on, you know, how is that, I'm okay with it, right?
Yeah.
I'm okay with it, but is it stunting me from also completing certain things, right?
Yeah. So what's coming to mind for me, tell me if this resonates for you, Bruce, is to be more discerning about it. Like the more you work on this, the more discerning you can be. Okay, that's a project I'm not going to complete, but that right. is one that I'm willing to complete because it's important enough, and I'm willing to be in all of the discomfort of not being perfect and complete it anyway. So I wonder if working with a perfectionist or whatever came up today that might feel juicy for you can help you make even better decisions about which things to complete and which things to not complete. Does that
land? Yeah, that's helpful for sure. And I see that. It's also this idea of not being perfect in the moment as I'm doing those things too. You know what I mean? So like just generating a perfect idea, it's a double-edged sword in a way, because I know something's going to come of it because it'll generate other ideas, but then it's like, I've got to kind of wait for that. And then I move on to something else, or I got to wait for that to come back. Not sure if I'm explaining myself right, but that's kind of, it's like this nuance that's I'm playing with or working with.
Yeah. What's a good homework assignment you want to give yourself on that?
That I won't complete. I have no idea, Joanne.
I'm wondering about working with the part of you that is scared to complete and becoming better friends with that one.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
I have to identify, I think I have to identify a project and like feel into that project and like what does that feel like all the way through to whatever complete is. I mean, there is no complete, right? So feeling into that to get, I think the discernment part first is important, right? Like what's most important first, and then what is the completion aspect. There's other pieces. Yeah,
I think that's another great question too. Like for any project that you're working on, what does completion look like here? And maybe also some of those columns I was talking about, like this is the unrealistic completion, this is the good enough completion, this is the ideal completion. I think there's some different ways you can play with some of that.
Yeah, I think the other thing that comes up too is FOMO, right?
Yeah.
The fear of missing out, like mm-hmm. that also kind of, that part of me comes in there. Like,
yeah.
That sticks in there, so. All right, thank you for just kind of playing with that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Feels like you have some good directions to go in. Jen, I'm going to turn off the recording and then I'll take your share. We are officially done. I'm so happy for